Will the House please come back to order? For the at ease, we had a motion on the floor to return to second reading, House Bill 287, for the purpose of adopting Amendment Number 1. Representative Cooper.
Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw that motion.
Hearing no objection, the motion is withdrawn. During the at ease, apparently what is a substitute amendment for Amendment Number 1 has been placed on the clerk's desk. Mr. Cooper.
Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for purposes of specific amendment.
Let the clerk please read the amendment.
Number 1 by Cooper, Rudd, and Greening. Page 3, lines 15 through 21. Delete all material between lines 15 and 21. Rewrite as follows. Section 14-18-60, non-discriminatory instructional programs. School board shall review textbooks and instructional programs for evidence of sex or ethnocentric bias every 3 years. Teachers shall be trained in methods aimed toward decreasing the damaging effects of sex-biased materials already in use.
Question before the House is, shall the House return to second reading, to return House Bill 287 to second reading for the purpose of adoption of this specific amendment? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Cooper.
Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of, I suppose it's Amendment Number 1, is it?
Yes. Is there objection to the motion? There is objection. Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, could somebody explain to me a little better what do we mean when we say teachers shall be trained? Who's going to do the training? What kind of training? What does it cost? So forth. What are we talking about when we say that?
Representative Rudd.
Perhaps someone else knows more about this than I do, but I'd be glad to give it a try. The training sessions that have gone on in Anchorage, I believe that the format is about this way. What they do is just get a group of teachers together to review textbooks that they are using now and try to look at them from the point of view of whether or not they evidence any bias on the basis of sex. And once you start looking at a textbook from that point of view, it suddenly dawns on you, for instance, that there are tremendous differences in the activities of boys and girls in the text, and there are tremendous differences in the illustrations. And I think that the training involves, first of all, making teachers aware of the bias that is built into the textbook, and second of all, teaching the teacher methods of, despite the bias that is built into the textbooks, teaching with that textbook in a way that will seek to alleviate that bias in the minds of the children.
Is there further discussion? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This substitute amendment does not resolve my problems with this section, and I would appreciate knowing what it does resolve.
Representative Cooper.
Speaker, the proposed amendment simply requires the school boards to review the material for bias and every 3 years, period, and that teachers would be trained towards decreasing the damaging effects of biased material, which is in fact going on in many other school districts throughout the state. I think that the amendment is an acceptable compromise. It does point out legislative concern in this area, but it does not form any kind of a mandate for book banning or any sort of arbitrary classification of the material.
Representative Carpenter.
May I hear the amendment read again, please?
Clerk, please read Amendment Number 1.
Page 3, lines 15 through 21. delete all material between lines 15 and 21. Rewrite as follows. Section 14-1860, non-discriminatory instructional programs. School board shall review textbooks and instructional programs for evidence of sex or ethnocentric bias every 3 years. Teachers shall be trained in methods aimed toward decreasing the damaging effects of sex-biased materials already in use.
Representative Osi.
Mr. Speaker, I have to agree with Mr. Carpenter. I don't know what this does any good at all. And that if they're going to review it every 3 years, you're going to have newly elected school board members every so often. So that's it's going to be their own personal feelings. Who is going to check on those when they do the reviewing? Who's going to take and replace all these textbooks? There's going to be a tremendous amount of cost involved in this. And I must agree with Mr. Freeman that teachers shall be trained in methods. Where are they going to get this training? Who is going to train them? And what is going to be the criteria for it? It can be the same thing to be trained it. Well, they can, time goes on, probably more liberal than even this. And I like the amendment, first one that Mr. Cooper had. I certainly don't see where this is going to solve anything. And I am opposed to this amendment. I would rather just go back to the other one he had.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I don't see anything in the proposed amendment that says they have to replace textbooks. I don't know where Mr. Osi found that. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, the best information I have is most of our school superintendents in the state are making over $40,000 a year. And if they can't arrange to train these teachers, they better hire some new school superintendents.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I understand more fully now what this amendment does, and it is a compromise, but I don't think it's a satisfactory compromise. And I think it's so incongruous that a bill that's so important and carries so much necessary law should be a bill that includes a section that calls for a textbook review.
Any further discussion? Ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? We'll have a roll call vote on the question. The members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 4 nays, 1 excused.
So amendment number one has been adopted. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask the unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Article 287 be considered in growth and as the third in place on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read committee substitute for House Bill 287 in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 287 amended by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. An act prohibiting sex discrimination in education in the state and implementing Article 1, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution.
There are a number of other amendments on the clerk's desk. They were piled up here during the at ease. And since I'm sure the members want to take these up, I'll ask the clerk to read the amendments in order. And if the sponsor wishes to move the amendment and return to second reading, may do so. Is the clerk of any more amendments? Committee substitute for House Bill 287.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Swanson. Page 4, line 11. Strike. Page 4, line 11. Strike all language through line 16.
26.
Excuse me, 26.
Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for a specific amendment.
There's objection. Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The bill, and I certainly support the bill and the concept of what we're trying to do here, but I think that, as was mentioned earlier in the debate here, that this language is far and away too harsh and too severe, especially for regional educational attendance areas. And I think that there's adequate protection in the bill to do everything that the author is intends to do, because if you go to page 3 and start with compliance, the commissioner of education shall monitor, he shall establish a compliance timetable, he shall establish guidelines, he shall have a program for equal opportunity and equal education opportunity. And over on page 4, it continues under B, that any person aggrieved by a violation of this chapter may file a complaint. He has the independent right of action in Superior Court for damages. And I think that there is adequate protection without going to the severeness of taking away, terminating all or part of the state foundation program. Now, it's a little different when you're talking about training teachers and reviewing textbook books in the city, but a lot of places in rural Alaska, we don't have those opportunities. So it could be a drain on our educational programs if we don't comply. It's actually a threat to us if we don't comply. I certainly think that this language is far and away too severe, and I do not think that it's necessary, because I think that, as I just mentioned to you, there is adequate protection for the people, and the adequate protection here to make the people comply without going to the severeness of taking away the foundation program. The cost of reviewing the books is going to come out of that limited fund that we have in the REAAs. The cost of training the teachers is going to come out of that limited funding we have in the REAAs, and I just don't like that threat. I am going to support the bill. I think it's right that every youngster, as far as the in the school, I think that they have every right of equal opportunity and every bit of sports. I think that the bill addresses itself to equal opportunity and wages, hours, working conditions, and I completely and fully agree with the concept of the bill. But this is one part that I would like to see out of this piece of legislation, because I'm sure that it would work an unusual hardship on the REAAs.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I take a different view from that of Representative Swanson, in that I think that the provision that the Board of Education can have a hearing, make a finding that a district is not in compliance, and then has to, of course, make a further finding that not only are they not in compliance, but that they are not actively working to come into compliance, and then has the option of ordering a mandatory affirmative action program and instituting appropriate procedures, I think that that is far less harsh than what might happen if we leave it only in the hands of the Human Rights Commission or of the Superior Court to enforce this section. What I was trying to do with that section is to keep the possibility of redressing grievances within the school district and within the Board of Education, rather than making it necessary at all times to go to the Human Rights Commission or to court. The idea was to keep it as close to home as possible, make it less onerous on those who are seeking redress of grievances so that they don't have to hire a lawyer and go to a great deal of expense, and make it possible for the education community in the state to handle that kind of thing without having to go to a lawyer and go to the Human Rights Commission or to the Superior Court. So I take exactly the opposite view of Mr. Swanson. I think this language makes it more possible that these things are going to be handled in a fair and logical manner than it would be if we left it up to the court itself. On the question of terminating the funds, I think I explained before, that is the absolute end of the line as far as the redress of the inequities is concerned. It only comes after the Board of Education has held a hearing, and of course by the time the Board of Education gets to it, I imagine that there will have been a finding within the school district that would have been handled within within the school district involved before it ever gets to the Board of Education. I would imagine that the districts are going to set up a machinery under this so that they can handle these things right in the school district. If it ever gets as far as the Board of Education, then the board has to hold a hearing. They have to make the finding that the district is not in compliance, and further, that the district is not working to come into compliance, which is a provision that I'm not aware of in any other law. In other words, they can still not employ any of the sanctions until they find that the district isn't trying to do the job. And then they order the mandatory affirmative action program, and the withholding of funds is the final last-ditch resort. Mr. Speaker, I submit that if we think it's important to eliminate sex bias in education, then we think it's important enough so that when you get to the end of this very, very long road, then you do have the power to withhold funds.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the thing that bothers me about this section is we apparently have a conflict between the execution of two different provisions in the state constitution, and I think this has been mentioned before, but just to explain where I'm coming from on it, I want to point it out. Article 7, Section 1 of the Constitution says the legislature shall by general law establish and maintain a system of public schools and so forth. Of course, this particular bill before us proposes to enforce Article 1, Section 3 with regard to avoiding sex discrimination. And it bothers me a bit because I think that section, using that ultimate tool of terminating state funding, particularly in light of the Hooch case and other things, may approach an interference with the constitutional mandate to the legislature to provide that kind of educational guarantee to the citizens of the state of Alaska. And yet, of course, the intention of the bill, and it's recited right in the title, is to enforce another section of the Constitution. I think you could go either way on this question, but I'm afraid I have to favor the motion to delete this section for that reason.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, presently there is in the law AS 1407-075. A provision, let's see if I get the right one. No, it's 1407-070, withholding state funds. It says no state funds may be paid to a school district or teacher who fails to comply with the school laws of the state or with the regulations promulgated by the department. Presently, the department has the power to promulgate regulations on the distribution of the foundation program and to withhold funds any time there's a violation of a law involving those funds. So I don't think there's a constitutional question in that manner. I'm somewhat bothered by a question that Mr. Gardner raised earlier, and this is how are the districts or the REAs going to review a decision by the board that they're in noncompliance with this discriminatory law, and that, you know, what remedies they have? Well, the remedy, of course, is to go to court. But that might be kind of difficult for a small district or an REA that has just had its funds cut off to go to court. And I don't know at this point whether this is entirely clear how an REA seeks relief or a district. I think it puts it on the other foot. In other words, somebody's going to have to go to court. I just soon have the people wishing to enforce this law be the first ones to go and then have the court review it. But I think the problem with this provision is it's going to require the individuals in the school district who've been cut off, have their funds cut off, to challenge the action of the board, which may or may not be correct.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if it would be appropriate, but I have an amendment on subsection 3 that takes a little different tact. It trying to limit and reorient this section. I wondered if it could be.
I don't think it'd be appropriate, Mr. Gardner, but you can talk about it if you'd like to.
Mr. Speaker, turns out I have an amendment I'm thinking about here. In subsection 3, what I would suggest doing, if this amendment did carry, was changing terminate to suspend and then adding some new language down on line 26 that would state, for those programs found not in compliance under this section, and limit the application of this instead of having the possibility of terminating all foundation program funding. I think that whether there's a constitutional problem or not, that goes somewhat towards addressing the question that Mr. Brown just brought up. But that doesn't resolve the additional question that Mr. Greening was just discussing about how the school districts resolve their differences.
Representative Swanson?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I think that Representative Rudd hit the nail right on the head when she said this is the end of the line. And this very well could be the end of the line for a whole REAA, which could compose of anything from 4 to 14 schools. Someone along the line, and I'll take the extreme case, someone who might object all along the line could take this to court, and if they didn't comply, wham, we have our funds cut off in an REAA. And I don't think that's right. I agree with what we're trying to do in the bill, and I agree that all people are equal. But I don't think that this threat should be left in this piece of legislation. In fact, I don't think that it's necessary for it to be there to do everything that this bill is trying to do.
Representative Redd.
Mr. Speaker, I do want to reemphasize that the cutting off of funds is the end of a long, long line, during which, all through the process, the school district will have an opportunity to come into line with the guidelines set by the school board. And will not only have that opportunity right through the hearing, but beyond the hearing, because the school board also has to make the finding that they're not working to come into compliance. I imagine that this section will never, frankly, come into play. But I think it has to be there because it has to be there because the legislature has found that this is serious enough, that we think it's serious enough, that the school boards must work actively at it. I know that the federal government now has the power to withhold funds from school districts all over the country. I don't believe that power has ever been exercised because they, as is proposed here also, have a very long process built into the legislation which allows for review and re-review and establishing programs that are aimed towards bringing the district into compliance.
You ready for the question? The question is, shall the House return to second reading for the purpose of adoption of amendment number 2? The motion takes 21 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Meekins. Any other member? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 14 nays, 1 excused.
So the motion to return to second reading is carried. Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt amendment number 2.
Yes. Object.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think we've pretty well debated the reason why we went back to second reading. I could add to my arguments that there are places in rural Alaska right today and will be tomorrow and the next day where we could not comply with this regulation. There will be things and facilities that we may have to build into our buildings that we do not have the money to do that with. I think by adopting the amendment and taking the threat away from us, that given the time and the opportunity, we will be able to comply with the rest of the bill. I think that there's adequate, as I said before, I think there's adequate protection in here without threat of losing our funding.
Representative Carr.
Mr. Speaker, I think I could probably support the changes Mr. Gardner would like to propose if he gets to them. I have trouble believing, Mr. Speaker, that there's any district in the state of the 52 that can't comply with, that can't be non-discriminatory. I'd find it absolutely impossible to believe, with all due respect to the representative from Nenana. Mr. Speaker, one of my prime concerns in this whole issue has been that of discrimination in employment and promotions. I am thoroughly familiar with one school district which has a long-standing policy of discriminating against women for promotion to assistant principal, to assistant superintendent. Mr. Speaker, I submit that the members of this body look at their own home districts, and they can honestly say that their districts have been non-discriminatory toward women in employment, then they are much better shape than my district has been. I don't think that's the case. And I think without some kind of an enforcement capability somewhere down the line, that situation is not going to improve very much. You're not going to find any written policy saying we won't promote a woman to be principal. You'll have the assistant superintendent saying it verbally behind closed doors. That's what has happened. It happens every school district in the state, I'll bet, and that's what we need to stop.
Representative Rudd.
I didn't understand. Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to respond in part to Mr. Swanson's things. He talks about building requirements and so on. There is nothing in this law that requires any adjustment whatsoever in any physical facilities.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With all due respects to Representative Parr, I would like to, which something I know that he's well aware of, I'd like to make sure the body is, that the statutes, both federal and state, are replete with non-discriminatory language for the point that he raised here a moment ago.
Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, just very briefly, the thing that worries me about this amendment is that if we take this section out, there's absolutely, as far as I can figure, there's no real penalty for anybody just thumbing their nose at the intent of the legislation. It seems to me, now maybe I can be corrected on this, but it seems to me that if we take this section out, then in spite of all the good words that are written here, a particular maverick board someplace or other that made up, you know, of, I guess, chauvinists, if what we're talking about here, can just say to the rest of the state and say to the Board of Education, say to us as a legislature who are passing this legislation, you know, sorry about that, but we're not going to do a doggone thing about it. And it looks to me like there wouldn't be anything done about it. That's why I think this section is necessary.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think we probably should defeat this amendment, and I will offer another amendment that I think will accomplish the same thing, that will get rid of the onerous part of Section 090 and temper it a little and direct it towards a suspension and those programs that are not in compliance instead of the broad acts approach we kind of have in 090 now.
Representative Rudd.
I'd just like to make one more point, and that is, as I mentioned, the federal government now has the power to cut off funds to the state of Alaska if the state or any of its school districts are found to be not in compliance. So at the present time, we are under the possibility of having all of the federal funds for the state for education cut off because of the non-compliance of one school district. I think it's far more preferable that we handle these things on the state level, and make it possible for us to bring ourselves into compliance so that this isn't going to happen, and make it possible if one particular school district should be found not to be in compliance, then that school district would have its funds suspended or whatever, but it would not endanger the rest of the state's federal funding.
Representative Nakak.
Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering, with reference to the difficulties in this area, that's a major part of the discussion. Can we gain exemption by game units? I I'll withdraw my question.
You ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 2 be adopted? I think we'll have a roll call vote on this question also. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 19 nays, 1 excused.
So Amendment Number 2 has been adopted. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill 287 amended being considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Is the clerk of any more amendments on her desk?
Amendment Number 3 by Mr. Parr. Page 3, lines 15 and 16. Delete caption of section. Insert new caption to read affirmative action on textbooks.
Representative Parr.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to withdraw the amendment.
Hearing no objection. Ms. Clerk, have any more amendments on the desk?
Amendment Number 4 by Mr. Anderson. Page 4, line 27. Add section 14, 18, 120. Game management units 9 and 17 are exempt from provisions of this act.
Senator Vanderson.
That was on behalf of the tired bulls in my game management unit. I move and ask unanimous consent for the withdrawal of the amendment.
Are there other amendments pending?
Amendment Number 5 by Mr. Gardner. Page 4, line 23. Change terminate to suspend. Delete the period. Add the following language. For those programs found not in compliance under this section.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, it's not necessary, so I'm not going to move.
Mr. Speaker.
The House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Does clerk have any more amendments on the desk?
Number 5 by Mr. Gardner. Page 4, line 23. Reinstate section 14-1890 on page 4. Change terminate to suspend. Delete the period and add the following language on line 23. For those programs found not in compliance under this section.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, because of the popular acclaim for my amendment, I was requested to reintroduce it, and I would move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for purposes of specific amendment number 5.
There's objection. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, what the amendment does is it reinstates 090, which was in the bill, and then adds the amendment changes terminate to suspend, and then at the end of that section it limits it to suspension for those programs found not in compliance in this section. In other words, it's not going to be, they're just going to shut the whole school down. I think that would be improper because we have education of all the kids in the school to consider, regardless of particular actions of one administrator or the school board.
Representative Bryson.
Mr. Speaker, I have one question. How do you tell which funds they're going to suspend? As it pertains to the programs.
Mr. Speaker, it would be those programs that were found to not be in compliance with this section of the law. For instance, if there was discrimination in vocational education, like you would suspend those parts. It's discretionary in the sense that you suspend all or part of the funds in regard to that program. And I think the obvious intention of this section is that it shouldn't be used. It's the fact that it's on the books is probably more worthwhile than the use of it. And the suspension means that when the school district was in compliance, it would get the money back.
Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I have a real problem with suspending just part of the foundation program. Is that half a teacher, or is that a teacher for a half a year, or is that half the shop, or is that the maintenance for the gymnasium? Is it a teacher? I don't suspend all or part. If I have a real problem here on part, I don't know how we could suspend out of the $27,500 unit, how we could suspend $5,000 of that, how we would figure out what part of that unit allotment, where it was, who was going to fall on. It doesn't make it to me, it doesn't make any sense to suspend only part of this program. I don't know how you'd penalize somebody just part of the unit allotment. It could have all kinds of problems, because they might say, well, we've got half of it, so we're going to take out one teacher, $14,000 a year. We'd be doesn't work. It wouldn't work.
You ready for the question? Question is, shall the House return to second reading for the purpose of adopting specific amendment number 5? Motion takes 21 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Eliason? Any other member? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 15 nays, 5 excused.
We've got a problem with the roll call machine. We'll try that. First total, as I recall, was 22. One member changed his vote. Should have brought it down to 21. We'll avoid that roll call. Take another roll call. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Nays, 1 excused.
So the House has failed to return to second reading. Is the clerk of any more proposed amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
It leaves House Bill 287 before us in third reading. For further discussion, Representative Speggy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, some of the issues that I wish to speak about could possibly have been addressed while we were on the amendments. However, I felt that they were broad enough that perhaps it should wait for discussion of the bill. I've had a substantial amount of resentment expressed to me in the district that I represent over the rather rapid implementation of this sort of thing by legislative fiat. And specifically, concurrently with this, this measure relates to a thing in federal government known as Title IX. We talked and touched on what are some possible constitutional problems. We talk about assigning duties without regard to sex. I'd like to touch on that very briefly. Those of us that have raised both sons and daughters recognize that there's substantial differences in girls' bodies, boys' bodies. There are times when girls just simply shouldn't be put out to pack in a cord of firewood. Those of us who live in the country recognize this and perhaps are biased in that we give those duties to a son that has a stronger physical frame that's more capable of handling that sort of effort. These sort of tasks have sort of been delineated from time immemorial out of recognition for the differences between the male and female body. Those of you that haven't raised sons or daughters perhaps may not recognize that. The State Board of Education, Board of Regents shall develop a survey for distribution, and this language relates to a survey for public, to determine male and female participation in sports, etc. Now, additional surveys have been taken, apparently. And one school district that I represented had a survey and an assessment, and it asked for parental participation. And a great deal of resentment was expressed to me by some female teachers, non-mothers. And this is the sort of question that these questions are the sorts of questions that were given to parents. I discuss with my children sex bias, its causes and possible effects. I'm aware of research which indicates that children who are less sex stereotypes are also among the most creative and intelligent. Now, some of these perhaps are bearable, but some are considered by parents to be a direct intrusion into moral attitudes and mores within the home and have engendered a substantial amount of resentment, feeling that this sort of crash social change shouldn't be brought about by instant legislation. I seek out current literature on women's rights, sex discrimination, sexism in education. This is a yes or no type question. I assist my children in examining their texts for sexism and other biases, ageism, classism, racism, etc. I encourage my son to consider a wide range of job possibilities, including those traditionally ignored by males, such as nursing and teaching young children. As I explained, some of these I can find no fault with, but some I do. I explain to my son that if he plans to be a parent, he must recognize that his work outside the home may be interrupted while he assumes equal responsibility for child care. In my home, I am careful not to organize activities along this is for boys, this is for girl lines. In other words, there's really no reason why your daughter at age 15, who is having a particularly distressful time, part of her life, shouldn't lug in, you know, a couple of cords of firewood, because that would be discrimination. I avoid dividing chores by sex, e.g., boys mow lawns, girls dust furniture, and etc. I give my son a doll and encourage him to be nurturant and loving. I give my daughter a soccer ball and encourage her to be physically active. With your tolerance, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to continue with some of the questions because I think they're very pertinent. And further, I am working to tolerate the same degree of independence, assertiveness, loudness, and restlessness from my daughter as from my son, and dependence, expression of fear, tenderness, and giggling from my son as from my daughter. I try to respond honestly to my son, to my children's questions about sexuality, and give information to my son and daughter about abortion, contraception, heterosexuality, homosexuality, lesbianism. I don't even know what some of these things are. Family planning and venereal disease. Now, mind you, Mr. Speaker, here we're getting into an aura of moralism, that sort of thing, inside the family unit, in which the educators have no business, in my view. I do not tolerate more slang and rough language from my son than from my daughter. I don't tolerate from either one, or didn't. I've broken my habit of thinking and referring to only girls as sweet, helpful, gentle, neat, passive, dainty, emotional, and weak. I've given up thinking and referring to only boys as strong, aggressive, active, bad, athletic, creative, intellectual, and brave. Now, that implies that people think of either boys or girls only in those terms, and that's entirely false. I do not refer to the father as head of the family. And then the questionnaire goes on concerning my child's schooling. And there, it's a long thing, and I'm skipping through, mind you, to pick out some things that I think that really aren't things that the school boards and the Department of Education should be getting into inside the family. I share with my school, with my child's other parent, when possible, responsibility for PTA, PTSA, I don't know what that is, school voluntarily, cookie baking, etc. Hope you fathers will take note. I encourage the school library and the public library to add materials and books from presses publishing items about non-stereotype females and males, e.g. the Feminist Press, Daughters Incorporated, Lollipop Power, New Seed Press. I have encouraged the PTA or other parent groups to schedule a program on sexism and education at one of their meetings. I familiarized myself with Title IX regulations available from HEW and state laws available from state departments of education, which prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex and education. And then some activist language. I have helped to organize a group of concerned community people to assist the school district in identifying and eliminating sex and race discrimination. There's a whole host of questions here, but some of those are very offensive to family units, to teachers, to school board members out in the district, and they have expressed that. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'd submit that perhaps there's some principles in the bill that was submitted by sponsor that are valuable, and generally I could adopt some of those attitudes. We have removed a little bit of the evil, but Mr. Speaker, I would submit that there's still a substantial amount of work that needs to be done. If you're going to have a bill that you're not going to have to go home with and find that the bureaucrats in the Department of Education have taken that soccer ball that you want to give your daughter and really run with it and come up with the type of offensive questionnaires that I've talked about here, and I would submit that if you think that you're going to have to take some flack over something as innocuous as a legislative pay bill, that's only the beginning. This is a real controversial issue out there amongst those folks. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to note that I cannot vote for the bill. However, I want to speak in favor of it. I'm beginning to have serious doubts about my indecisiveness. First of all, in regard to that soccer ball, Dr. Kephart at Purdue University 20 years ago was writing on psychomotor fitness and development in our young people, and made it clear as long ago as that, two decades ago, that the girls could do it with the soccer ball the same as the boys. And most of the differences are old wives' tales. I may borrow a phrase. I wanted to change that to old persons, but then I got to thinking about that and dropped it. My mother, I used to watch her play basketball, and she was an awfully good athlete, and she would dribble twice, and she'd have to toss the ball to one of the other girls, and occasionally she'd get the ball up to the center line, but she couldn't cross it. She had to hand it over to someone else who played on the other side of the floor. They couldn't even play full court. And anyone who has gone to see a girls' or women's basketball game in the past 4 or 5 years realizes that it's the hottest sport going, and we're seeing some tremendous athletes being developed. Most of the arguments to the contrary have proved themselves fallacious for 20 years. We saw women perform in traditional male roles in pipeline construction over a 3-year period of time, and saw them performing every bit as well as the men in many of those roles. The reason I have to vote against this, of course, is because it sets up a textbook review. But otherwise, I commend the legislation.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this bill also. My opposition is based primarily, Mr. Speaker, on most sections are redundant to existing statute, federal and or state. My further objection is that, unfortunately, the amendment number 1 was adopted, which I believe is in opposition to free speech and really puts a limiter, if you wish, Mr. Speaker, upon the right of action of school boards, whatever their determination is. Mr. Speaker, I would further like to remind you in this body that on the 85th day of this session, this House, two distaff members included, voted in favor of sex discrimination on our action that we took on committee substitute for House Bill 72, and I would urge them to vote in favor of sex discrimination when they vote on this bill.
Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of this piece of legislation, and I apologize to Representative Rudd for harassing so long on the floor, but I think that the amendment was good. But I feel strongly that, especially in our education system, that equality starts with equal opportunities in our schools, with everyone, our teachers and our people that work in the schools and our students. I'm probably one of the few people in this room, and sitting right at this desk, I cast a vote not too many years ago for equal rights, for the Equal Rights Amendment. And I have not varied from that, because I think that all of us have an equal opportunity. I think that if we hire someone in the school as a janitor for X number of dollars an hour, and if we hire a woman to do the same work, she's entitled to the same pay. I think if we hire a coach to coach our basketball team in school, and he gets a certain amount of money, that I think that when we hire the woman, the teacher, to teach basketball to the girl, she's entitled to an equal pay. And I think that this piece of legislation is a very good one, and I urge you to support it.
Representative Cooper.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to point out to the body in support of this bill that the Constitution of the State of Alaska as of 1972 reads as follows: no person is to be denied the enjoyment of any civil or political right because of sex. The legislature shall implement this section, and that's exactly what we're doing here.
Further discussion?
Question.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 287 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Five yeas, 14 nays, one excused.
So House Bill 287 has passed the House. Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to bring up reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 72.
Puts the bill automatically before us in third reading. The clerk please read House Bill 72 in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 72 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I have a proposed amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
The clerk, please read the proposed amendment.
Amendment Number 2 by Mr. Chatterton. Page 1, line 29. Following the period after the word located on line 29, insert a sentence, underlined, An historical district shall not include or encompass private lands unless owners of such lands approve.
Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, I ask, move and ask for unanimous consent to return to second reading for the purpose of this specific amendment.
There's objection. Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for this amendment is, as I read the bill that we passed here yesterday, it virtually says that a historical district may be established. Now, Mr. Speaker, in statute, Title 29 already exists reference to historical sites and historical monuments, and it speaks to the point that nothing can be designated as a historical site or a historical monument without, if it's on private land, without the consent of the owner. I think it's only fitting that we extend that same privilege to a private owner in the case of establishing a historical district. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller. Speaker, inclusion of this language would take away from the authority of the municipality. This legislation that we voted on yesterday very specifically sought and accomplished the goal of leaving all planning and zoning control in the hands of the municipality. At the present time, any municipality that wants to can create a historic district, and in fact quite a number of them have. Just for the information of the body, these would include Anchorage, Eagle, Ketchikan, Clockwan, Nome, North Slope Borough, Skagway, and Sitka. They've done this on their own, Mr. Speaker, even without this legislation. All this legislation does, it says once a district is established, in the interest of preserving the rich cultural, historical values of Alaska, long-term, very favorable but fair, interest rates are available to the owners of private property in those districts. Now, if we put this restriction in there that's been proposed by the maker of the amendment, we're actually cutting back on the authority of the city councils and the borough assemblies as it currently exists. I think that local planning and zoning is strictly a matter that should be dictated by those municipalities. We should not be, at this stage of the game in this legislature, making those decisions. That's a decision for the local legislature. I urge you to the defeat of the amendment.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The majority leader did refer to Anchorage, and indeed Anchorage did establish a historical district, quote unquote, without the consent of the people who owned privately lands within that district. I am very sure that that will end up in the courts. I think that's a ridiculous way to proceed. I think that a private property owner certainly has a right to decide whether his place of living or his place of ownership is to be included in a historical district, and I urge returning to second reading so we can adopt this amendment.
Clerk, please reread the amendment.
Page 1, line 29. Following the period after the word located on line 29, insert a new sentence. A historical district shall not include or encompass private lands unless owners of such lands approve.
Is there further discussion? You ready for the question? Question is, shall the House return to second reading for the purpose of adopting amendment number 2? Motion takes 21 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
It's wrong again. 19 yeas, 14 nays.
We'll avoid that roll call. Try it one more time with the machine. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Brown? Any other member? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 17 nays, 1 excused.
So the House has returned to second reading. Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment is before the body, and the reasons for its existence have already been covered, and I will not continue.
Representative Chatterton, technically you have to move the amendment.
Thank you. I will move and ask for unanimous consent to adopt the amendment. Objection. Thank you.
There is objection. Representative Chatterton.
Thank you. Then I would have nothing further to ask for, but other than the question.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I just wanted to point out to the body that if a local municipality wishes to make the provision that Mr. Chatterton has made in this legislation, they can do so without us cramming it down their throats by including it in this piece of legislation. There's nothing to keep a local municipality from making the very decision that the representative from Anchorage is attempting to make on a statewide basis, but they would make it on their own local basis.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, may I have a very brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease.